The More You Love Someone, that from the cast album of Avenue Q, the new Broadway musical at the Golden Theater on West 45th Street, and want to talk about Avenue Q and Little Shop of Horrors and a bunch of other shows, most of them off-Broadway, with my very special guest on the phone with me from Long Island, a little further out than I am at the moment. I'm in Babylon. She's out in the Hamptons somewhere today, but has been very kind to speak with us on all sorts of theater things, because she is a theater critic for TheaterScene.net. Her name is Jeannie Lieberman, and I want to welcome her to Dave's Gone By. Hey, Jeannie.
Hi, David.
How you doing? How was your weekend?
My weekend was good, a little chilly, but beautiful, as it is today. You know, I was just thinking about these two Broadway shows that we're going to talk about. If anyone dropped onto Broadway right now and heard us, they would wonder what happened to the Broadway musical. Because both Avenue Q and Little Shop of Horrors are kind of simplistic.
Well, simplistic in the sense, explain that actually, go for it.
Well, I mean, it's not the traditional book musical with highly choreographed, costumed, directed to with general songs, love songs that can be lifted out of context and sung.
Well, actually, we just played. I don't know if you were able to hear
it. I heard it. I don't think that's a generic love song.
It's not generic at all. That's what makes it so terrific.
If you love someone, you want to kill them.
Isn't it true? Haven't you ever wanted to take
maybe
a baseball
true.
Bat to...
But it's not what something that you would have likely heard, you know, in the golden age of Broadway musicals.
Probably. Oh, but you know what? The Broadway age of golden musicals came up with Guys and Dolls and Adelaide singing about a person can give you a cold.
You're
same
absolutely
thing.
Right. You're right, now that I think of it.
And all I want to say about The More You Love Someone and Avenue Q is the more I listen to the Avenue Q CD, the more I remember what a good time I had in the theater and how much more I even like it now. Than sitting there. It's funny stuff. It's a good
well, that's what
thing.
Happened to me, actually. It sort of whizzed by me when I saw it off-Broadway, because I had seen Xanadont the night before, which was a very glitzy, high-energy, almost psychedelic musical.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was so relatively simplistic that I thought, I don't know, crude sets, puppets, you know, give me a break. And it seems to be geared for the postgraduate group.
Of which we are both, I believe.
Well, yes, I was. Thank you very much.
No, you're always postgraduate. I mean,
yes, we are. But these are the recent postgraduates who were concerned with finding a job and finding a love mate and, you know, the price of real estate and stuff like that.
I don't know. Two out of three for me there.
Some things never change.
But
then it really did take on racism and homophobism and...
All of it. That was kind of the fun part. It did it within the realm of a Sesame Street type show with actors carrying these puppets, and you really, you know, you are always sort of looking at the actors, but it's joining with the puppets. So there's that split focus, but you buy it all, I think.
Yeah, when I saw it again on Broadway, this time I wasn't reviewing it. I brought somebody, one of my writers, so I could just enjoy it. And you know, it just really was wonderfully pleasurable and very sharp, very sharp.
It has that whole thing about, I guess, the modern musical. It's ambivalence. It's always, everyone's a little bit racist, is one song. Schadenfreude is another, you know, everybody wishes a little something wrong with someone else.
Yeah.
I don't know, I liked it a lot. So if we're talking about puppets and as you say, simplistic-ish musicals.
Yes.
How does Avenue Q stand up against, and it's not fair to compare them, but the revival of Alan Menken and Howard Ashman's Little Shop of Horrors, also on Broadway at the Virginia Theater?
Well, I would say that Little Shop has no intellectual redeeming or social redeeming value, but I was kind of embarrassed to walk out enjoying it.
Really? I mean, had you seen the original, which I did not?
I think I saw the original. It was 21 years ago. But I did see a summer production of it recently on Fire Island, and, you know, I had to review that, so I had to sort of get back into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most endearing part of it is the score, the Howard Ashman, Alan Menken score, which is so much better than the actual show, and it sort of gets into your head and stays there. Like, suddenly Seymour is another love song.
No, it is. It's another unusual-ish, generic-ish love song. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it,
and be a dentist and all that. And, and a love song to a drill, I would assume. Did you, in my review of Little Shop, my problem, and it's not fair, but it is going back to the originals. I never saw the stage play, but of course I'm familiar with the Frank Oz film.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Steve Martin, and there's Ellen Green, and there's Rick Moranis in my head, and I'm trying to watch instead, you know, Rob Bartlett and Cary Butler and
Hunter Foster.
Hunter Foster.
I thought Hunter was wonderful. I mean, he starred in You're in Town, and he brought all his talent. He was just nerdy enough, to, you know, not to be too nerdy and dorky, but you know, lovable and endearing, and he has a wonderful voice and stage presence. I thought he carried the show.
That's interesting. Yeah, okay. And Cary Butler as Audrey, not Audrey the plant, Audrey the
yeah.
The Audrey.
Well, you know, it's an easy role to play. It's a ditzy blonde kind of.
And what did you think of Bartlett? He plays Mr. Mushnick.
I thought he was good. He
Me
was
too.
Good.
Yeah.
You know, he was. He had both aspects of the proprietor. He was sort of friendly and paternal, and then turned into a manipulator.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I thought they were all good, and just they didn't. They were sort of pale to me. It was kind of
well,
like.
Well, then you have more vivid memory of it than I do. You know, I just thought I was just overwhelmed by Audrey too. I was sitting
the plant,
in the third
yeah.
row, and I, you know, I really did feel like a child, because it just grows and grows, and at the end it sort of spills over the proscenium towards the audience.
Yeah, that was a moment. That was a moment worthy of The Lion King, that opening when everything's coming down the aisles and everything's going crazy. When that plant is coming out, everybody's grooving to it. It's very, very cool.
It's very cool, and it's, you know, a chance to laugh, but I wouldn't take young children to it. It's basically, it's very bloody.
And there's some language also in there that surprises me still.
And I don't remember that, but I know that Doug Sills is that terrible sadistic dentist.
That's right. Every kid, even if they just had a pack of Oreos, would be like, I'm going to go, nope, never again.
No, we don't want to go to a dentist after him, but he got his just desserts.
Dessert being the operative term, I guess.
The operative
dessert
term.
For every. All right, we have just, believe it or not, just a little bit of time left already.
No.
I want to talk Off-Broadway. Okay. I saw, Omnium Gatherum.
Oh, the dinner party from hell. And it is, you know, it's dinner party from hell, but the way it was written and for the audience who witnessed it.
Did it? Say.
Well, it was supposed to be a substantive play. And another reaction to 9/11, it gave a little dignity and insight into 9/11. But as written, every character who's supposed to be somebody in real life, Martha Stewart, you know, the author Tom Clancy, Christopher Hitchens, they were just talking heads
yep.
and sound bites.
Mm-hmm. And when I was watching it, I had forgotten all the stuff I read about there being particular characters. Because, you know, the so-called Martha Stewart character in that play did not remind me at all of anything like
it. So it was like a waste of energy.
Annoying. Yeah.
All the intelligentsia were trying to identify the people on stage, and that did not work well for
Pointless.
The play.
And as a play itself, as you say, I fully agree. I was in it for a little while because it's clever. Some,
yeah, but when
two
characters in the play, they tell you are already dead.
Oh, yeah.
Two-thirds of the way, you know. Give me a break.
And what killed me about that was, okay, if you start to accept that, if you say, oh, wait a minute, okay, so this one's dead and that one's dead, then the entire preceding hour and a half, we're meaning it wouldn't make any sense logically at all. It kills the whole
theory that's right.
of what's
you know,
going on.
That's right. There was no sense to it at all, and there was very little substance. And I really didn't really, and nobody seemed, none of these social icons offered any insight into 9/11. So to me, it was just a waste.
Okay. Just enough time now to do kind of a Siskel-y, Ebert-y kind of a thing on one or two more pieces.
Okay.
Recent tragic events.
Well, there are a lot of ways to trivialize 9/11, and this was the worst.
Okay.
This was worse than Omnium Gatherum. I mean, it had nothing to do with 9/11. Heather Graham was totally wasted in this. And well, let's put it this way. The author said at the end that the play isn't controversial, and if anybody's offended by it, they have no sense of humor. Well, you count me in.
And I'm going
count me out.
Who write pre-defenses before anybody's even said it's offensive. It's like they're trying to drum up some kind of interest in the place somehow. Jamie Lieberman, thank you for drumming up interest with us on Dave's Gone By. Please, remind us again. You write for
theaterscene.net.
Mm-hmm.
So I want everybody to click on
theaterscene.net.
Theaterscene.net.
And also, thank you for talking with us about the theater here. I mean,
always a pleasure.
Inviting you back to talk about more stuff as the season really kicks in. Thanks again so much.
I can't wait.
Bye.
Bye.